have Ralph Schutzhold visiting Perimeter from Germany. He's going to tell us about monogamy of entanglement and mean field and Zapf for still lives.
Okay, thanks for the introduction and thank you for coming. And I also thank the Perimeter Institute for this nice invitation. And in this talk, I'm going to speak about some ideas of how to use our understanding in quantum information theory, mainly our knowledge about entanglement, to understand quantum matter systems like spin lattices a bit better. And there are also world-leading experts on this here at the PI, so probably you know a little bit about it, but I hope I will tell you some new things. I mean, another idea are these matrix product states, where I also use your knowledge about entanglement to describe quantum matter systems better, but this is sort of some other idea. Okay. So what I'm talking about, so here I will be mainly concerned with a spin lattice. So let's just have a regular lattice of 1/2 spins, which can be viewed as qubits. And then the lattice sides are labeled by mu and nu. And then each lattice side, I have sort of one of the spin 1/2 particle, which can be described by the Pauli matrices at each lattice side x, y, z. So then my Hamiltonian looks like this. That's a general Hamiltonian. If I restrict myself to local terms acting on one lattice side and interaction terms between nearest neighbors only. So spins very far apart shouldn't interact only nearest neighbors. So then I have a local term here, some local magnetic field E times sigma mu at this lattice side, and then some interaction term, nearest neighbors mu and nu, and then sigma mu, and some J matrix, which I leave unspecified in between. And that's the most general thing you can write down if you only want to have interactions between nearest neighbors. And in front, for normalization, I have put a 1 over z, where z is the coordination number, which just counts the number of neighbors for a given lattice side. So this is a usual quadratic lattice side. Oh, that's a joke. But you can also imagine either going to higher dimensions, to the same hypercubic lattice in higher dimensions, you can have different numbers of z. Or if you go to some square or triangular lattice, then you have also different numbers. Let's make a drawing like this. Oops. Ah, yeah, not perfect. Okay. And then so on in all directions. And in such a lattice, the number of neighbors for a given side would be 6. So here z equals 6. Whereas here for a quadratic lattice, we have 4 neighbors, so z is 4. But I have very, very general lattices here. Okay, and in general, even though the Hamiltonian looks quite simple, the ground state of this Hamiltonian, or time evolution, but let's focus on the ground state, is very complicated. So that's what one usually does to get a first idea, is to make a mean field ansatz, to saying, okay, let's make a very simple state, mean field ansatz, where I give each lattice side just a special state, say spin up, for example, and then just say all these lattice sides have the same state, so all the lattice spins are spin up. And then if you say that, okay, let's do a general state like this, not just spin up, but in some direction, and then let's put this in, take this state, then take the expectation value of this Hamiltonian with respect to this state, and then what you get is a variational mean field energy per lattice side, which looks like this. You just have the expectation value, local expectation value of this spin mu. Here, spin mu, these are vectors, then the matrix in between, and then over here, the local field. And that works surprisingly good in many applications, of course, not always. Sometimes it fails badly. But the point is, why does it work surprisingly good, and can we understand what is the deviation from this mean field ansatz? And here you already see, I have one single spin at each lattice side, so what I totally neglect is all the correlations and all the entanglement in this state. Okay, so how can we understand why and when this might be a good idea? Oops. Ah, okay. So let's consider the exact ground state, say, of the whole lattice. That's a pure state psi. And then I look at, say, first one single lattice side mu here, and I take the reduced density matrix of this lattice side mu by taking the total state, which is psi psi, and tracing over all the lattice sides except this one, so of all the others. And I can also do the reduced density matrix of a pair of spins, mu and nu, by tracing over all spins but these two, and then so on, 3-point, 4-point, and so on, density matrices. Okay, and then I wanted to talk about correlations. So I split up, say, this density matrix for these two spins into a, that's the total density matrix for the two spins, into a product part of these single side density matrices plus these correlations. And there you see, if you then do expectation values of operators, they also split up into a correlated part by the product of the expectation values. So this just gives you the usual correlations. So all the correlations are in here. And you can do the same thing for three-point lattice, or for the three-point density matrix for three lattice sites, mu, nu, and lambda. You get a fully correlated part, then three parts with two-point correlations, always two pairs each, and then the fully separable ansatz. And then you know you can do this for four and so on. And now the idea is, let's do the following, that we say we start in at a point where this J, the coupling between spins, is zero, and we only have the B term. Say B in Z direction, then we know the exact ground state in this case would be each spin just points in Z direction. Okay. And then we can imagine, okay, now we start there. In this state, the mean field is actually exact. There are no correlations. So all these guys here, this is zero, this is zero, this is zero. They're all zero, since the two-point function is exactly this and the three-point function is exactly this. And now slowly switch on the interaction between these spins. And if you do this slow enough, we would say we stay close to the ground state. And then we have to solve what happens with these density matrices. So then you can just say, okay, take the on-site density matrix, time derivative, plug in here is the time derivative of the total density matrix. And then you trace over everything but this one side. And then if you do this, what you get at the end is some function which contains the same on-site density matrix plus the correlations. So you cannot solve this exactly unless you know the correlations, two-point correlations. Then you can do the same thing and say, okay, let's look at the time evolution of these two-point correlations, doing the same trick over here, and then you get a function which depends on the density matrices for one, for single site, two-point correlations plus three-point correlations. And then, of course, so on, if you do the time derivative of these guys, then you get even the four-point and becomes more and more complicated. And you see the problem here, this set of equations doesn't close. So in principle, without knowing all the correlations, you cannot solve it. But you can make some little approximation, exactly starting in the state where there's no interaction, where we have exactly at each side a spin pointing upwards. And then we slowly switch on the correlations and see what comes here on this side. So slowly you get some correlations and how big they are. And then if you plug everything in, look at the equations, you see that all the terms appearing here as a source term for these correlations have a 1 over z. They all scale with 1 over z. That means if you look at lattice sites, which have a large z, a large coordination number, then the correlations which build up are quite small, like 1 over z. The three-point correlations, then you do the same thing, are 1 over z squared, 4-point, 1 over z cubed, and so on. So in this way, if you assume z to be large, you can then get a perturbative solution of this set of equations over here. So exactly, it doesn't close, but in this large z limit, you can make a perturbative ansatz and then get an approximate solution. Oh yeah, and if you have any questions, please interrupt at any time. Yeah. So that's then what we call the hierarchy of correlations, but it's similar ideas have been used in other contexts as well. So we consider formally the limit of a lattice with a very high coordination number, for example here at 6, or other lattices can be even bigger. And then we have the following hierarchy, the on-site density matrix, that's of order 1, of course, since trace must be 1. But the two-side correlations are already suppressed and scaled with 1 over z. Three-point correlations scale with 1 over z squared, and so on. And in this way, we can then make an approximate solution. And just to know, that's the same as these, what is usually called the law of large numbers, or these BBGKY hierarchy, or many other names. I mean, the main thing you can imagine is that you have many independently fluctuating terms, that the sum of them is almost classical and doesn't fluctuate anymore. And I think the same idea happens here. So now what we can do is to say, okay, let's take this equation for the on-site density matrix. Remember, this was a function of the on-site density matrices plus the correlations. But now we saw, these correlations are small. So we can approximate this as a function just of the on-site density matrix plus some correction. And this then can be solved. You know what the on-site density matrix is, if you slowly switch on the coupling. And the same way, you can say, okay, let's look at the correlations. That's a function of these on-site density matrices, which you already know. The correlations themselves, 2-point and then 3-point. But the 3-point stuff is suppressed even more. So we can approximate this up to these kind of corrections by a function of these on-site density matrices, which we already know, plus these correlations. And that, again, can then be solved. And in principle, you could iterate this to get then the 3-point correlations and so on. Yeah?
What I'm a little bit worried about is that this correlation you have, for given mu, you have Z correlation.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And whether the, well, each one may be 1 over Z.
Okay. Effect. Yeah, that's true. I mean, this counting already includes that you have a sum. You have sum over all the neighbors. And in front of each sum is a 1 over Z. So that the total one is then order 1. Yeah, that's already included here. And still is still then scales like 1 over Z. So that, yeah, that's included. You have, for example, here, you have the sum over all neighbors, but in front of the sum is a 1 over Z. And then these two together is then again order 1. But yeah, that has been, that's why we have this sort of, this one here. Otherwise, the whole argument wouldn't work. And we also need this to make the mean field limit well defined. So that's sort of this normalization. Okay. So in this, imagining that we start in a state which has no correlations, like say that J, the coupling is 0 and we have only local terms, and then slowly switch on the coupling, in principle we can then solve this and to calculate these correlations in an iterative way. And in principle you could also again go through the whole thing again and calculate the 3-point functions. That becomes quite messy, but in principle you can do it. And that's sort of here in this papers where we do this to get an analytical solution. But in principle, you can also use this idea saying, okay, if we know that these guys are small, these 3-point correlations are small, I can then say, okay, then I have here a nice closed set of equations, nonlinear but closed, and put this on a computer and solve it. And that's what we did in this paper over here. And that also gives surprisingly good results even in low dimensions. So where I would say, this 1 over Z in low dimensions, that doesn't make sense. But if you compare this approximate solution with an exact numerical diagonalization, it already gives you quite good results. But that means that neglecting the 3-point stuff here is not too bad. And then you can calculate, for example, what happens if you make if you don't switch on decoupling slowly but suddenly, then these correlations sort of tend to spread through the whole lattice, and that then can be calculated, for example, with this scheme over here. Okay, but still, this is sort of not a rigorous proof. That's more like a nice and physical expansion, but it's not rigorous. So the question is, can we understand this a bit better from the rigorous point of view using what we know about entanglement? Okay, and then I probably have to say a little bit about entanglement, even though I'm sure most of you will know it, but just for those who don't. So let's take first a pure state of 2 spins. And then we say, let's say 2 spins mu and nu. You know, the state is not entangled if you can write it down as a product state. So the total state of 2 spins is state for 1 spin times state for the other. For example, 1 spin is up and the other one is a linear combination, which means basically to the left. So this is a not entangled state. And all other states are entangled. And to the extreme would be this maximal entangled state, which is called the Bell state, where you have up, up, plus, down, down. And you see you cannot write it like this. And that's usually called Bell state. And a general pure state for 2 spins is then somewhere in between. and can be written as a linear combination. So if you have a general state, it can be written as some amplitude times a product state, which is not entangled, plus another amplitude times this maximal entangled Bell state, where we have single spin rotations or single spin unitary operations on one spin and on the other, which don't change the entanglement. And these two amplitudes here, they are called the concurrence. So the amplitude in front of the totally entangled state is the concurrence, square root of C, and for normalization, then the other amplitude is then square root of 1 minus C, which means if the concurrence is numbered between 0 and 1 and measures the entanglement of this state, how much it is between these two. So if the concurrence is 0, this term drops out and we have a fully separable state, not entangled. And if the concurrence is 1, this guy drops out and we have a fully or maximally entangled state over here. And I should note these nice properties of the concurrence I'm going to use, they are only not so well developed for two spins. If you have, say, two Q-twits or two spin 1/2s, I should say, if you have two spin 1s or two spin 3/2s or so, then things are more complicated. Or if you have three spins, then things are also more complicated since you don't have just this simple kind of entanglement. You also have sort of an entanglement between all three spins, and you cannot see it if you have just pairs. And one example is this GHZ state over here. So you have all spins up or all spins down. And if you look at the concurrence between two pairs, it's always zero. Only by looking at all three spins, you see that the whole thing is entangled. So usually you make a picture like this. You have these spins. And you only see the entanglement if it's in all three. So the point is the nice features here that only works for two spins. So that's what I wanted to say. Okay, problem is this is only for pure states. But if you look at such a lattice here and we have a general ground state, then if you take the state, the reduced density matrix for these two spins here, in general you will not have a pure state, but it will be a mixed state. And the question is, how do we do the entanglement for mixed states? And mixed states, you know, can be decomposed into this dyadic product of pure states with some probabilities here in front. But the problem is this decomposition is not unique. So for a given pure state, there are many ways to decompose it. And just one way to see this is to take, this is for pure states, but just since it's simpler, take this is for two spins, just take one spin. And then for one spin, this density matrix can always be written as 1/2, the unit matrix plus, and then some linear combinations of these three Pauli matrices, which can be written as scalar product with some R times sigma. And then this R you can view as a point in the Bloch sphere. Say over here. And any state within the Bloch sphere corresponds to an allowed density matrix. And the states on the surface of the Bloch sphere are the pure states, and inside are mixed, and outside is not allowed. And now you say, if you look at such a decomposition, for any mixed state inside, one possibility would be to say, OK, I take a linear decomposition of these two guys here at the poles. But you see, OK, you're not forced to do this. You could also do another decomposition like this. Or if you take more than two pure states, you can see, imagine there are many, many possibilities to represent one mixed state in terms of these pure states. And this is just for one spin. For two spins, it becomes even more complicated, and you cannot do such a nice picture anymore. But let's just give just one example. If you have for two spins, this fully mixed, which is called the fully mixed state over here, that can be represented as a linear combination of all the basis vectors, spin up, 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 down, down, up, and so on. We would have and all these states are not entangled. But you can also write this as a linear combination of Bell states, and all the Bell states are maximally entangled. So then the question is which one, or what do you do? How do you define this entanglement? And then what is usually done, since they say the state is entangled, if you cannot write it as a product, so what do you say? Okay, if you have an entanglement measure for pure states over here, then this entanglement measure for the mixed state is then just the combination of all these entanglement measures with the probabilities, but not any decomposition. You have to take the decomposition which gives you the minimum entanglement. And that then rules out the Bell state and would say that a state like this over here is then not entangled. And the problem is, since there are so many decompositions, to do this actually for a given entanglement measure is a very, very tough job, very, very difficult. And fortunately for the concurrence, this problem has been solved, this minimization, and you can actually write the concurrence as a nice and well-defined function of these density matrices over here. So you take the density matrix, apply some matrices, then take the complex conjugate, some further matrices, and then to do the eigenvalues of this, and then you can calculate the concurrence. So there's a well-defined procedure. And then once you have that, you can show that for general mixed state with some concurrence C, you can write it as a decomposition of pure states with some probabilities over here, such that each of these pure states has exactly the same concurrence as the mixed state. So if you have a mixed state, then you can write it as pure states and they all have the same concurrence. And then if you plug this in, you see, okay, that fits since all have the same here. So if I just sum over all the probabilities, I get back my original ones. And that's a quite powerful result. And again, this in this nice way, that only works for two qubits. Only we only know this result for this simple system. Okay, and another nice result we know about this concurrence is this monogamy of entanglement. And that's the point if you have, say, these spins in a lattice, and you ask yourself, okay, there could be some concurrence entanglement between these two, and there could also be entanglement between these two, and these two, and these two. So how much could be the total entanglement, sum of all them be? And there's a nice relation that if you sum all the concurrences squared for all these neighbors, then this is always smaller or at least equal than this here, which is called a one tangle. And that tells you how much mixed this state for one lattice site is. Let's write this. So this is basically the determinant of the reduced density matrix on one for one side. And if you have, say, a pure state, so rho mu is psi psi, then in a nice, if you take this as a basis vector, then my rho mu as a matrix looks like this, 1, 0, 0, 0. And then you see the determinant of this guy is 0. And if I take a mixed state, let's take the maximally mixed state, which is 1/2 the density matrix, then I have here rho is 1/2, 1/2, and then you see the determinant is 1/4. Then multiplying by 4, you see that this one tangle is between 0 and 1, where 0 means pure state and 1 means maximally mixed state. And that then gives you a bound on how much concurrence you can have with all the neighboring spins. So if this is in a pure state, of course, you cannot have any entanglement with all the neighbors. Whereas if this is in a maximally mixed state, then this can be entangled a little bit with all the neighbors and has to satisfy this bound. Now we say, okay, the ground state, if you're interested in the ground state, this must obey the same symmetry, or we assume that the ground state obeys the same symmetry as the lattice, which means this reduced density matrix or this concurrence is the same as this one, or this one, or this one. So if you sum them, you get this coordination number Z. And then what you find is the concurrence between two given neighbors is smaller than the square root of this one tangle over here, which is below 1, or at most 1, divided by Z. which means that this entanglement decreases for large z, and then the expectation would be somehow this mean field ansatz should become better. If z becomes larger, mean field should become better. Okay, and how to make this explicit? Yeah, we take this now, all the properties we have, and try to estimate the ground state energy of the lattice Hamiltonian I showed you earlier. So you see, if you want to calculate the expectation value of such a Hamiltonian, here these are all local terms. So to calculate them exactly would only need the local density matrix at each spin. But to calculate this one, you need the two-point density matrix for neighboring spins. But if you have that, then it's enough. If you have these two-point density matrix, you can also calculate this one, obviously. This is just a reduction. So once you have these two-point density matrix for neighboring spins, which is this one here, you can calculate this. And now we use what we have learned just a few slides ago. This two-point density matrix has some concurrence, so we can split it up into a combination, weighted with some probabilities into pure states, and each of these pure states have the same concurrence. That's why each of these pure states can be written with some amplitude as a product plus square root of concurrence as this maximal entangled state. And now this goes back in here, and that goes back into our Hamiltonian. So if you neglect this guy here for a while, what we get is just all states which are product, and then this Hamiltonian just simply becomes a sum over all the probabilities, and then local terms at each lattice site, plus here again local terms. But here we have neglected this guy, so we made some mistake, but how big can a mistake be? The mistake can be at most be as big as this guy over here. So we have something which diminishes as the square root of z, where c is the concurrence. And then you see, this is just what we had in our mean field ansatz. So if I calculate my mean field ansatz, I already have a very good estimate for the exact ground state energy, and the mistake I'm doing is square root of c. And this is basically just the local expectation values. And then we know if z, the coordination number, becomes very large, concurrence becomes very small, so the mistake you make becomes quite small. So that brings me to our first summary. So what we have seen is that this concurrence measures the deviation of the exact ground state energy from the mean field value. So you have here mean field energy per lattice site minus exact ground state energy per lattice site. And this can be bound by the square root of the concurrence with this factor here in front, where this is sort of the matrix norm of this J matrix, and that's then the matrix norm of the local field. And we also see that the concurrence can only vanish, then this time is zero, that means this guy must be zero, if the mean field ground state actually has the same energy as the exact ground state, it means mean field is one of the exact ground states. Otherwise, the concurrence between nearest neighbor must be non-zero. And we have also seen by the monogamy that for large coordination numbers, the concurrence becomes small, at least like this. And that means this mean field ansatz becomes better and better for large z, which is all sort of standard knowledge in the condensed matter community, but I haven't seen a sort of rigorous result like this yet. There are other approaches to motivate this, but this one I haven't seen yet. And maybe a little remark, this argument here is different from this quantum definitely theorem, which some might know, since for this quantum definitely theorem, what you have to use, you have a state of n, say, spins, and only if this state is fully permutational invariant, so the state is unchanged, if you exchange any of the two spins, then you can make similar estimates by this quantum definitely theorem. But the problem is, if you have a lattice, then the state is not fully permutational invariant, so I cannot just exchange these two spins and the state doesn't change. So unless the lattice is, in the lattice, every spin is the neighbor of everything, any other spin, then you don't have this full permutational invariance. There is an example where you do have it, and that's called this Lipkin-Meshkov-Glick model, you basically have that every spin is the neighbor of any other spin. So it looks like this. So here you see there's no nearest neighbor. So here the sum goes over all pairs of spins. And then you don't have 1 over z, but 1 over n, where n is the total number in front. And in this case, you can apply this quantum definitive theorem. But this case is sort of special. So in principle, what you can do is to introduce one very big spin, which is just the sum over all the little spins. And then this Hamiltonian is basically just the interaction of this one very big spin with some field and with itself. So it simplifies quite a lot. So this is also an interesting model, but here we are looking at a lattice which is different, where you don't have these full commutational invariants. Okay. Problem is, this is a square root of z, and earlier I showed you z, so the question is, can we get a bit further? And let's look at an explicit example. So if our spin lattice, and let's make things simple. Say we have a local field B pointing in z direction, and a J interaction or hopping term or dipole term or what you want to call it in x direction, xx. And then if you do the mean field ansatz, you probably know if B, the local field, exceeds this hopping term, we are in the paramagnetic phase. And in the mean field ansatz, the ground state is just like this. All the spins point upwards. And that's the mean field ground state. And the question would be, now, can we get some information about the exact ground state? It's probably not this. And we can say, OK, yeah, let's do this. We know the exact on-site density matrix. We can write it as this mean field value here, just spin up, plus some rest, some correction. But we know all these corrections, if you add some correction here, we always increase the energy of this guy. So we sort of increase the energy. And the only margin we have for that was this concurrence, since we know the exact ground state and the mean field ground state are very close together. And the distance is the concurrence, square root of the concurrence. So we cannot increase it too much, since otherwise the exact ground state would have a higher energy than mean field, and that's not possible, since you know it's the ground state. So the mistake you're making here is also bounded by the square root of the concurrence. That means locally, you have for the single site density matrix basically this state plus these small corrections, and then you know C goes as square root over 1 over z, so this is goes down for large coordination numbers. But then you see, if you have such a state, you have mostly such a pure state, and then calculate these one tangle again, you'll see it's mostly approximately like this, with one tangle equals 0. So what you get for this one tangle can only come from here. So it means the one tangle is actually also small, it's not one, it's also quite small. And now if you go back to this monogamy argument, that you see concurrence is smaller than one tangle over z, square root over it. But this is now smaller than one. You see you can improve this bound, and we went up to that the concurrence is suppressed as z to the minus 2/3, and the one tangle as z to the minus 1/3. So it's already better than what we had before, where we have to use that this is a unique ground state. If the ground state is not unique, that's not possible, this argument, but if you have a unique ground state, then it's this. But still, there is some gap between z to the minus 2/3 and 1 over z, which was suggested by the method I showed you earlier. The question is, can we somehow try to understand what's really going on, whether it's this or this? And for that, we introduced some new idea that we say, OK, let's take this mean field ansatz, all spins pointing up, and try to make it a bit better by adding a little amount of entanglement to all neighboring spins. Like here, we have the mean field ansatz for two spins. And then we take it and add a little bit of entanglement, some entangling operation, where xi is then some arbitrary matrix. And these are, again, the Pauli matrices. And then you see, if you take here spin up, the only thing which is then interesting here is then sigma x, that you both flip both spins with a little probability or a little amplitude. So this is for two spins. Now we generalize the whole thing for our spin lattice, saying here, this is our original mean field state, all spins pointing up. And then we apply this entangling transformation that we flip always with some small probabilities the pairs of neighboring spins and do this for all neighbors since we want to have a translation invariant state. And that's then our improved mean field ansatz. Looks like this. The question is this really an improvement? So can we really get an energy which is better or lies below the mean field ansatz? So okay, let's take this state for some value of psi and calculate the expectation value of the Hamiltonian I just showed you as a variational ansatz. And then after some calculation, you get this result over here. So that's then the energy in this improved mean field ansatz per lattice site. And you get this result. So minus j, j was the hopping hyperbolic tangent of this psi, the real part. And then b is cosine of the imaginary part of psi over cosh hyperbolic cosine of the real part of psi. And first you see the imaginary part of psi doesn't help at all. It only increases the energy. So we take psi real. And if we take psi real, then if we switch on psi a little bit, so add a little bit of entanglement, the b term sort of becomes worse. So we increase the energy. But with the j term, if psi goes in the right direction, we can lower the energy. And then we see, is there some psi value where we can get a minimum here? And then doing this, just take the relative, we find, okay, there is a minimum for this psi value, which is given by the j term over 4 times b times z. So we get, with this improved mean field ansatz, we can get a little bit below the usual mean field ansatz for this amount of entanglement, which is small. And then calculating the concurrence in this state, you see indeed it scales like 1 over z, as suggested by the stuff I showed you earlier. I should say this is of course not an exact result since we make some ansatz and see how far we can go. And then we can see we can go that far that the concurrence scales with 1 over z. Okay. So just to generalize this, you can do the same thing for what is called the XY model. Yeah, we add some sigma y term over here. And then the whole thing depends also on this anisotropy parameter gamma. So if gamma is 1, this term is gone, and we just have the Ising model. Whereas if gamma is 0, then here we have xx and yy and the same footing, and then you have these invariants in the xy plane. So you can do the same game for this Hamiltonian, and you get almost the same result. That this psi parameter, which gives you this little bit amount of entanglement you add, is almost the same result up to this prefactor in front of it, which scales with gamma. And then you can do the same thing, say, okay, you see psi scales with 1 over z, so introduce some scaling variable that we can make this z to infinity limit quite nicely. And what you find is that the concurrence goes like 2 times the zeta minus zeta squared over z, but it vanishes if zeta becomes too large. You already see here, if zeta becomes bigger than 1, then this would go negative, but the concurrence cannot go negative, so then sort of it decreases to 0. So if this psi is small, then the concurrence increases with if you add more and more entanglement, but at some point, interestingly, it decreases again, until for psi equals 1, it vanishes. So the concurrence sort of first increases and then decreases again. And the intuitive picture for this is the following. Oops. New. And you know, with this psi, we added a little bit of entanglement between these two spins, and that gives you the increase in the concurrence. But the point is, since you want to have the whole thing in a translational invariant lattice, you also add the entanglement here and here and there. And these guys, they don't help the entanglement between these two spins, but here. So they introduce some additional uncertainty here and here. And if this uncertainty becomes too large, that's precisely this term here, then you cannot see the entanglement between these two spins anymore. So if you make the squeezing too much, then you actually decrease the entanglement, which is a bit sort of surprising. But the point is, this occurs at values of zeta. If you plug everything back in, for the Ising model, that's already way beyond the phase transition, where we change then from the paramagnetic phase, where this dominates, to the ferromagnetic phase. So it doesn't screw up any of these things, but it's an interesting observation that sort of, with adding these squeezing transformation, the entangling strength, concurrence force goes up and then comes down again. And the other interesting point is, here there's this gamma. And if gamma becomes zero, that means if you have the isotropic model over here, then this psi and also the concurrence vanish. And that's a bit strange, since I just told you that this stuff can only vanish if the mean field is exact, is an exact ground state. But that's actually the case here. If gamma equals zero, and you have the isotropic case, then this is actually the exact ground state in the paramagnetic phase, and that everything works again. So there's no difference between mean field and exact, since this is in the paramagnetic phase, this is exactly the ground state over there. So that's consistent. Okay, that brings me to my conclusions. So I considered a general spin lattice, but I restricted myself to local interaction or local fields and nearest neighbor interactions. If you have more complicated spin lattices where you have plaquette operators or anything, then that doesn't apply. So it's only for if you have only these nearest neighbor interactions. And then you can show that the difference between the mean field ground state energy and the exact ground state energy is bounded by the concurrence with this prefactor over here, given by the Hamiltonian, which means that the concurrence measures the deviation from the mean field. If concurrence is very small, then mean field is quite good. And if concurrence is large, then mean field is not so good anymore. And furthermore, the concurrence can only vanish or vanishes exactly in those cases where the mean field actually is an exact ground state. That can happen in these spin lattices at special points, but in general, of course, you will have the ground state more complicated. And then if you use this monogamy, the nice relation for the concurrence, we see that for lattices with a large coordination number, this concurrence goes down at least with 1/√ of z. If we now assume that we know a bit more, we know that we have a unique mean field ground state, then this bound can be improved, or this scaling can be improved, that the concurrence actually scales as z to the minus 2/3. But with other arguments, you would expect something like 1/z, and that can be sort of derived by this improved mean field ansatz, but that's no longer than a rigorous proof. That's more an ansatz and to say that it's reasonable, but that there's still some gap in between. And of course, this is only what I used here is the concurrence and the on-site tangle. It would be very nice to understand this if you include also the three-point correlations or higher, but unfortunately for these cases, we don't have these nice monogamy or other relations yet, so there's still further work to do. And if you're interested in this paper, the stuff I told you about here is then in this archived version. Thank you for your attention.
So we have plenty of time for questions. Thank you.